Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening. Hit that like button, leave a positive comment, or hit subscribe to get alerted when new episodes drop. All of this will help keep the project going. Thank you for your support and enjoy the episode.
Hello, and this is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And my guest today is Kathleen Methrick, who is a decorated leader in the biotech industry. And in addition to that, I have to look down at my notes because we have so many things that you're involved with and participating in. An alumna of Leadership Baltimore County, member of the Executive Alliance, or participant in the Executive Alliance Mentor Program, sitting currently on the Board of Advisors for the National Kidney Foundation, serving Maryland and Delaware, and will be the incoming chair of that board starting April 1st. So a lot of exciting stuff going on with you and a lot of fun stuff to talk about. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about this.
Awesome. Well, let's get right into it. Let's start with present day, and we can start kind of super broad, but give kind of just an overview about what you do in your current job or career.
Yeah, so I currently work for a large pharmaceutical company. I am a field marketer, so I'm home-based, which is terrific. I've been in that industry for quite a long time, couple decades, actually. And then also on the side, my husband and I have built and developed a property management company as well. So I have a day job and then a night job as well. And we live in Catonsville.
Awesome. I'm going to get back to that property management because that is news to me and I want to hear about it. So let's jump in our time machine. Let's go back to when Kathleen was a little girl. So give a little bit of context for the audience. Where are you from? How did you grow up? What were you like as a kid? Siblings? Start there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am born and bred Marylander, so I grew up in Sorin Park. My parents still live there. My origin story honestly really begins before I was born with my parents. Both of my parents are from rural Pennsylvania, and my father was one of five kids. And he was offered a free ride to school, college. It came with stipulations. He had to get A's or B's and et cetera, et cetera. The offer was made by a friend of his father or a friend of my grandfather. And for whatever reason, you know, time and circumstance, my father was the only one that took that opportunity. It was offered to all five of them. And it was amazing to watch the trajectories of the family's lives, right? It was a major step up for both my parents. It catapulted them into, you know, a different life, which then bled into a different life for me. And the reason I bring that up is it really shaped how we were raised. You know, my parents were determined that if they had been able to elevate themselves, we were going to continue on that trajectory as well. So my, you know, I have two older sisters, they're house of the three of us. And it was, you know, it was a really great childhood. My parents were super engaged in our education. You know, no matter what my dad had on his plate, he was a busy engineer at Northrop for 43 years. And, but no matter what he had on his plate, he was available to sit with us as long as we needed for help with our homework, et cetera. You know, they were at every school event we had, et cetera. We weren't wealthy by any stretch. We were just, you know, kind of squeezing by, but they had a real vision for what they wanted for us. And that kind of shaped my childhood. And I'm really grateful for it even to this day.
And what would you say, like when you were a kid, what were you like? What were some of your characteristics? And do you see those kind of flow through to who you are today?
Yeah, so I'm a youngest child and I'm, you know, kind of a, you know, what they call kind of like a surprise. So my older sisters were 6 and 9 years older than me. And then all of a sudden I came along out of thin air. So with that, you know, I fit classic into the youngest child birth order. It's one of the similarities between my husband and I, where we're both youngest child with two older siblings with large gaps. So our childhood experiences were kind of the same. And, you know, I was a quirky kid and I'm a quirky adult. So, you know, my two older sisters were both overachievers. And I was determined not to be like the runt of the litter, you know. So I developed, you know, an achiever sensibility really quickly in youth. So, you know, I think that sums it up. I was quirky. I was a quirky kid and I'm a quirky adult.
And what did you, or did you, and I don't like to say grow up, but I guess in a kid, that's how it's framed up to us. But what were your interests, or did you think like, oh, I want to do X as I get older, or when I grow up, or to have my job?
You know, I didn't. And it was kind of a source of a pain point for me because my sisters were both super clear. My sisters both double majored in math and computer science and went on to have very successful careers in engineering and computer science. And the only thing I knew was that I was not good at that. And you know, to see them have kind of something that they were drawn to, and then for me to not have that clarity was stressful, to be honest. I didn't like that. And I do wish, like looking back, that, you know, I think it's so strange that we ask a 17-year-old child to make a decision that's going to impact the rest of the trajectory of their life without any real, you know, information. You know, there are so many jobs I didn't even know existed, much less could go for. So, you know, what did I want to do when I grew up? All I knew is I didn't want to be a computer scientist. And the rest was like figuring out along the way.
Well, it's funny that you said, because one of the reasons that I started this podcast was really tied to not only sharing women's experiences, but that I don't think people realize, you know, at least for my childhood, it was like, you know, teacher, engineer, doctor, like it was all these very, nurse, right? Only very predetermined paths. And then you kind of get in the world and you're like, oh, I can do that, or I can learn this from that, and kind of, you know, jungle gym your way into something that makes you really happy. So I love hearing you reinforce that. I think that's going to be super valuable for our audience. Don't feel like you have to have it defined. And we'll get to that with your story shortly.
Yeah.
What from your parents, and either them as individuals or them collectively, what are maybe the one or two lessons that you learned from them that, again, has really carried you through life?
My parents are such role models to me. And the way that they showed up for us throughout all our lives, the way that they'll still show up for us. You know, my parents are in their 80s, and, you know, my dad will drop something at the hat, you know, at the drop of a hat if we need something. And, you know, that actually manifested itself in a really tragic way for our family. My oldest sister actually passed away from leukemia in 2011.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. But the way that our family showed up for each other, you know, the way my parents showed up, and my other sister, and we all just, you know, united together to try to get her through this was such an important lesson. And it was just the model that they set for us growing up, you know?
Yep. What, as you move on to college and post-college, like, what did you study? What did you get into? And kind of take us through a somewhat abbreviated version of kind of how you got to where you are today.
Yeah. So going into college, all I knew was that I didn't want to be computer science, trying to figure out something else. The one thing, I didn't play sports in high school. I was a band nerd.
Mm-hmm. What'd you play? What instrument?
I played the flute, and I was an all-state flutist, and I, you know, did all the various community orchestras and all that kind of stuff. And I was pretty good, you know, if I do say so. And, you know, so in the back of my head, I was like, well, there's this one thing that I'm really good at, you know, maybe I'll tinker around with majoring in music. And, you know, my dad kind of let that go for a long time, just let her, you know, explore that. And I still remember it to this day, like you know, I must have said something that indicated real seriousness about potentially pursuing that path. And, you know, he sat me down. He's like, I literally remember this. He sat me down and he's like, Kathleen, this music thing has been charming. But now it's time to pick a real path.
right.
And it's, again, it wasn't, he just, not to downplay pursuing a career in the arts, absolutely not to say that, but he was just really talking about the numbers and what you needed, the talent that you really needed to have in order to support yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, I literally picked a major by thumbing through and going through the sciences and saying, okay, what seems interesting? And I picked biochemistry. I lasted one semester.
I'm laughing. Oh, okay. All right. I'm just in no universe would I thumb through a catalog and be like, oh, biochem, that's where I'm going.
Right. Well, it's a science, right?
Yeah.
I lasted one semester. It's a horrible fit. But it did actually lead me to a major that I really loved, which was biotechnology, which is really a molecular biology degree, much less chemistry focused and much more like immunology, antibodies, genetics, all that kind of stuff. So he was like, pick something.
Yeah. How, Alvin, so this is interesting. I think this could give some also additional value for the audience. So when he sat you down, was there anything, how old were you-ish, like ballpark?
It was when I was picking colleges. So okay, whatever.
17, 18, senior, 16, whatever.
Senior, something like that.
So when he sat you down and he says that to you, because I think this is interesting because I think some, not all, I never like to define things or people by generations, but there's this thing of like pursuing your passion and doing what you love, right? And then there's also like a practicality that comes into life of you've got to support yourself and you've got to pay for things. So when he sat you down, were you like, yeah, all right, Dad, like that makes sense. Okay. Or were you like, oh, I'm devastated. Like this was my dream. I'm just curious because it was more like an interest and you were like, okay, that's practical. Thanks, Dad, for like calling me out on it.
Yeah. I mean, the whole basis of our lives growing up was practicality. Right. And, he had a very famous saying that I heard many times growing up, every Hopwood daughter, that's my maiden name. Every Hopwood daughter got three things. They got a college education, not an Ivy League, right? Like a run-of-the-mill four-year degree. Every Hopwood daughter got a run-of-the-mill four-year degree, a practical but well-running and safe car, and a modest wedding. And he would say, if you major in basket weaving, if you crash the car and you marry an idiot, there are no do-overs.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
So, and I think, his advice in careers was, find something, and this has always served me well, look for things that, play to your skill set, like figure out what your skill set is and what you're naturally good at, and then pick something that is interesting enough that you like to do it. But, work is work. You're doing it to earn a living. You're not doing it because you necessarily enjoy it. If you were picking things to do that you enjoyed, you probably do something else, but we all have to earn a living, right? Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't hate your job, but I've never ascribed to the, go for your passion, because your passion becomes a really stressful if your paycheck is depending on it, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's also something to be said for like making sure that you're fulfilling all parts of yourself. It doesn't all have to come from satisfaction of your, to your point, you don't want to be miserable at your job, but if you're good at it, you enjoy it enough, there's some intersection there of practicality and paying your bills. And then outside of that, you can kind of scratch your other itches. So take us through then, so you graduate college and then take us through, again, kind of an abbreviated version of how you got into your current role and what your steps were along the way.
Yeah. So My career has been a process of elimination, right? So I landed on biochemistry as a major. I loved studying it. It was a really interesting program. It was at University of Delaware. They only took, like, I think, like 10 or 15 people into the program. And it was a super intensive lab-based program where you're doing all kinds of really cool lab work, like growing antibodies and making plasmids and all kinds of cool stuff. And I didn't really know, you know, I kind of assumed I would go into some kind of research, you know, a field afterwards. And luckily, very luckily, between junior and senior year, I had an internship at a small biotech company. And that biotech company was a startup, and they had purchased a library of 100,000 compounds. And, you know, all these just little test tubes of one compound after another. And they were trying to find a hit against an enzyme with activity for Parkinson's disease. And so my job was every morning I would go into the freezer and I would get a set of five. And I would spend all morning setting up this test and then all afternoon running this test. And the test was like, you know, stir for 30 seconds, wait for 15 seconds, you know, put on, you know, it was this really mind-numbingly boring test. And so I'd get miss. The next day, I'd go in and get the same five because you have to duplicate your results. The day after that, I'd go get another five. And that was my whole summer. And I was like, I had kind of a little bit of a crisis of like, this cannot be my life. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. And coincidentally enough, the next summer, I actually interned there again. And literally all everyone was doing was going to a different place in the freezer. Like, So, it was senior year. I had to figure out, what am I going to do with my degree? What am I going to do? And that was really the heyday of pharmaceutical sales. Like, there was, you know, the late 90s, and there were a lot of reps out there. Companies were hiring huge sales forces. And it seemed like a decent application of a science degree. Like, I get a science degree and I, you know, go work with, you know, promoting different medicines with doctors. So it sounded to me like as close as I was going to get of applying my degree with my skill, you know, my natural skill sets. And so that's what I pursued.
Gotcha. And then when you were kind of earlier in your career, were there people that, did you have a mentor? Did you have people you kind of looked up to or resonated with, and if so, what were some of their traits, and what did you learn from them?
I would say the biggest mentor of my life has still been my father. But outside of that, professionally, the first company that I worked for in the industry was a fairly large company, and they were really great about setting up formalized mentor programs. So I did have some mentors along the way. And what was great about them is, you know, they took the time to get to know me and kind of use their experience and perspective to help me identify other areas, right? Like, because that's the challenge, right? If you're down on the ground, you can't see the same thing as somebody up in the trees can see. And so that was, you know, what spurred the transition to my first move out of sales into sales training. And it was based on that mentorship that I even got the idea. And then, you know, they really helped me navigate that interview process, navigate the right way to generate, you know, your advocacy and support internally, which really matters in companies. And they really helped me with that first move, those are lessons I've taken my whole career.
Can we back up a little too? Because I think it's an important one. And I was talking with a friend of mine, maybe who's very, you know, we can define success however you want. She is has a great career, loves her job, passionate about the work, and earns good money for it. So that's in my, you know, book, a good success. But we were talking, and she's a very, you know, intelligent woman. And then she's, you know, 20, 25 years into her career, and the advocacy part like just
hit her. Like, she didn't realize the importance of that when she started to come into some roadblocks. So I want to back up, because you made the comment too, how important in your perspective and or in your experience has advocacy, you know, having champions of you within a company?
Incredibly important, without a doubt. And, you know, I would, you know, caution of, you know, I have one industry experience, so other industries might be different. But in our industry, it is extremely important. And at the end of the day, you know, I've been on the other side, I've hired people. And at the end of the day, you want as much evidence as possible that that hire is going to be a good team member, right? And people can say anything in an interview. You have really, when you're interviewing somebody, unless you catch them in like a direct contradiction or something like that, you have no real idea if what they're telling you has any truth to it. You know, like, you can get a read, but, you know, it's very easy to, you know, it's very difficult, I should say, to really get a pulse on somebody from the interview process. What people say that have worked with them about that working experience matters, you know, and I've seen it on both sides, right? I think that that's a really important ask. It also demands that you stay in touch with your advocate, right? Like, nobody likes to get a call after 5 years of silence and say, hey, do you mind writing me a letter or something like that? But yeah, advocacy really, really matters.
And what for you, if looking back on Kathleen earlier in her career, or even now, you know, maybe even going back 10 years ago, but what advice would you give your younger self?
In my career?
Or in life, wherever you want to take wherever you want to take it.
My career in my 20s is pretty successful. My personal life in my 20s, not so. I would say, you know, I was in a relationship for 6 years in my 20s that should have only lasted 6 months. So, you know, I would give a younger version of myself that advice to figure out what are you doing, and you know, figure out your way out of this. Professionally, I did great.
What do you? Well, let's stay on both of those for a second. In terms of the relationship component, what one or two things would you, like, literally, you know, you're sitting next to Kathleen at that age, what are the one or two things that you tell her? Which, giving friends advice about relationships, I feel, is always a danger zone, because, you know, they're not necessarily going to listen. But what's the one or two things that you would have told yourself?
You know, this gets a little dark, but it's you know, it's true. I had been convinced or made to believe that, you know, he was doing me a favor by being with me, right? And I was, you know, not convinced is the wrong word, but I was made to believe that I was, generally speaking, unlovable. And so I would tell myself, number one, you are lovable. Somebody else will love you if outside of this one person. And number two, you are okay. You don't need somebody else's validation to be a great human and okay human and at peace with yourself. And those are just, that's just confidence I did not have in myself in my 20s. As I said, I grew up a quirky kid, and quirky kids, you know, aren't always the most popular kids, you know, so there were a lot in my past that, you know, fed into, you know, me believing that. But it's really tough. I've seen other folks in relationships similar, and it's really tough to get out of something like that if you're in it.
I really appreciate you sharing that, because I think I think that will resonate with a lot of people. And I think it's really important, you know, even like I say, I think it's really important to share those stories, because I think that people will resonate with people. And I get, you know, messages after doing these shows, and you know, people will message me and say, oh, this thing that this woman said, like, that happened to me, and that, you know, inspired me, and like, they're right. So I just want to acknowledge and say I appreciate you sharing that, because I think that's going to resonate, and there's people that are listening, they're in a similar situation. So I think that's wonderful to share and pay forward.
Yeah. I mean, it's, if it even helps one person figure their way out of something, mm-hmm. I don't mind, you know, I don't mind.
Yep.
I'm happy to.
Great. So, love it. So what were some of the traits, obviously, in your 20s and early on in your career, you had tremendous success. What were maybe the one or two traits that you remember about yourself, and maybe you still have them, but that really helped you be successful career-wise?
You know, I think a tough one, God.
Well, so you said achievement, right? So underneath that has to be what? Work ethic?
Work ethic. I mean, 90% of sales is showing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I the one thing that has served me well in my career that I will say is that I haven't been afraid to try new things. In my industry, there are kind of two groups of people that kind of pick a lane and they stay in it. And they maybe stay with the same specialty for a very long time or, you know, whatnot. And that's great because you develop these really lifelong relationships that are kind of, you know, invaluable. But my career kind of zigzagged me around in, you know, different working with different specialties of physicians, working with different settings, maybe an office setting, maybe a hospital setting. You know, I was in OR as well, selling device. I've been kind of all over the healthcare landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, so curiosity and not afraid to try new things would be, you know, what I would chalk it up to. Because, you know, if you're not curious and you're afraid to try new things, you're just going to miss out.
Mm-hmm. I love those two things. Those are probably two of my favorite as well. Yeah. And putting yourself out there a little bit, right? To try new things and be brave enough to do that. So I love those. Let's talk a little bit about some of the work that you do outside of your day-to-day job. I mean, you've done some volunteer stuff. Let's talk a little bit about NKF, National Kidney Foundation, serving Maryland and Delaware. So you are on the board of advisors there. What prompted you to get involved? And then you do some mentoring also. I know what prompted you to kind of get involved in nonprofit work or work that's outside of your day job, and what reward do you get from it?
Yeah, so I was exposed to NKF originally through my work. You know, there's a lot of overlap there and a lot of ways to collaborate. But I was willing to accept a board seat and work, you know, give up free time when I got to know this organization and a lot of the physicians involved in it, and just how much they truly care about, you know, helping patients do better. I mean, these are very, very busy people with a lot more on their plate than I do, and they volunteer and give their time. So I feel like how can you not, right? So I love the organization. The organization's mission is really around, you know, a lot of the issues with kidney health are, issues of health inequity, you know, that, you know, spurn from a lot of that. And so that's something that really pulls at my heartstrings and that I want to be part of the solution of. And so it's just, yeah, I think that's, you know, sums it up.
Yep. Gotcha. And there are a few, I have them down here. So I'll mention written down, I'll mention them. And then if I missed anything, let me know. But a few NKF, events, again, NKF serving Maryland and Delaware. So March is, I think, National Kidney Month. March 13th is World Kidney Day. And then NKF serving Maryland and Delaware have a few events coming up. Let's see. March 17th, the patient program. And then in May is a big fundraiser that they do in Baltimore. I think it's Baltimore metro area.
Yeah.
So if anybody listening is interested in learning more about that foundation and the events upcoming, go Google National Kidney Foundation serving Maryland and Delaware, and it'll pop up. And I'll also put the link in the show notes so you guys can learn more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that, you know, NKF is a particularly active nonprofit in terms of You know, they not only do a lot for professional education, they do, you know, scientific sessions, grants, et cetera. There's a, you know, there's a heavy activity from both Hopkins and University of Maryland in NKF and, you know, and the surrounding community practices to do, you know, to kind of help the professionals sharpen their spears. But then they also have a lot of patient-centered programs, you know, trying to help patients learn about how to find a living donor for a transplant if they're on transplant list, kidney screenings, et cetera, et cetera. So there's more programs that we could cover today. I would encourage people to look us up and see what's out there, you know, because kidney issues affect so many Americans. So there's a lot of resources.
Yeah, I sat on, well, you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording that I sat on that board, board of advisors for several years as well. We didn't overlap, obviously, but when I started, I didn't realize the amount of people that are affected by it. And then when you kind of start talking about it, yeah, there's many more people affected by it than I realized. So
yeah, and especially I would say there's a kidney risk quiz on our webpage. If by the time you start manifesting symptoms of kidney disease, you progress, you know, kind of unfortunately far along. So it really behooves people to kind of, you know, inspect that about their own health earlier and often. You know, because with anything, if you catch it earlier, you're going to have a better outcome.
Yep. So I want to ask one more question, but before I get, and then we'll get to rapid fire, which is totally unrelated to everything we talked about. But before I ask that, is there anything that you want to mention or talk about, that we haven't yet covered?
I really enjoy talking about, you know, I love the questions about, you know, how I, you know, chose a career path, my 20s, et cetera. I think the 20s are such an important decade of life because a lot of things happen in your 20s that really, you know, set you on different trajectories. And I, you know, my husband and I are kind of almost evangelical about choices in your 20s, you know, choices about, you know, who you marry might happen in your 20s. You know, the type of debt that you take on, you know, the different, you know, like if you want to have children, when you want to have children, there are just so many things that happen in your 20s that I would just urge people to, you know, I emerged from my 20s a very different person than I started. So, you know, it's, you know, that be mindful of those things as you go throughout.
Well, I think that's a super important point. And I'm you might know this, I'm messing up the year, but I think it's like our brains aren't fully formed till you're like, I think maybe 26.
Yeah.
But I remember too, the difference between my mid-20s and my late-20s, and just noticeably different on not like how I viewed the world, but how I thought about myself, how I thought about just issues in the world, my life, trajectory, money, family, yeah. Just like it you kind of go through these, and life, right? You go through these stages and then you kind of get to a point. I feel like my late-20s is where I was like, okay, now I start to like feel like a fully formed adult, you know?
Yeah. I think because you have a little bit of perspective under your belt, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have a decade. And so you have a little bit more, you're a little bit more worldwide, matured, you know, probably evened out on some things. So yeah, I think all big decisions in life should be held off until 30.
And for all the ones in the 20s that you make a bad decision, give yourself some grace because everybody's done it. So don't beat yourself up.
Absolutely.
All right. My last question then before we get to rapid fire is, how do you define success?
I define success as peace. You know, like am I at peace with where I am in my life? Am I at peace with, you know, the choices that I've made? Am I happy with the person that I show up as? You know, I think that, you know, you can define success in many other ways, but at the end of the day, if you have these other metrics, but you don't have peace inside, are you really successful? So that would be my answer.
Beautifully, beautifully said. Beautifully said. All right, I'm going to get to rapid fire, totally unrelated to what we talked about. So just, you know, chime in with whatever comes to mind first, maybe six or seven questions.
Okay.
Brick or stone?
Brick.
Delivery or eat in? I'm sorry, delivery or eat out?
Oh, delivery.
East, west?
East. East.
Grass or sky?
Sky.
Astronaut or deep sea diver?
Neither.
and the last one, beach or mountains?
Mountain.
All right. West. Perfect.
Yep.
Perfect. Yeah. Are you a skier? Yeah. Are you a skier? Or are you just like looking at them?
I'm a solid blue square skier.
Yeah. I love it. That's a perfect way to put it too. All right. Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation. I enjoyed talking with you, learning about your background. Like I said, I'd heard a bit about you before doing this this podcast, and you certainly lived up to expectations. So wonderful thank talking you. With you.
This was super fun. I really enjoyed it as well. So thanks so much. You're a gracious host.
Beautiful, beautiful. So again, my guest is Kathleen Methrick, and this is Lauren Asghari Podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And we will see you next time.
Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd Her Career Get There?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.